Chapter 9.
As we drew closer to the Chero village, I was taken aback by just how modern it was. On the surface, it looked like something you'd find inside a National Geographic magazine, with a primitive exterior of mud and leaves. But upon closer inspection, I could see the intricacies of the design. Several buildings were even constructed like miniature skyscrapers, with multiple floors and small window openings that dotted the entire front. There were clearly distinct sidewalks lined up along the sides of the buildings, too. And it looked like people were using them in the same way they'd be used in a metropolitan area. Rhino women waited down at the intersections for the oversized ants to scurry by before they crossed, while many of them rode on the backs of the beasts themselves. "Your village is impressive," I noted as we rode down the mountain. "How long did it take for you to get it this way?"
"Most of us had nothing to do with it,"
Batari laughed.
"I give full credit to Zakiyu. She's the mastermind behind our beautiful village. You'll meet her in a bit here,"
Rikuri snorted.
"Then you'll completely understand why our home is the way it is."
"Why?"
Nima questioned.
"Is she particular about everything?"
"That's an understatement,"
Ashanti scoffed.
"With Zakiyu, I wouldn't be surprised if she has a 10-step plan that lays out how she should eat her evening meal.
With about 5 backup plans in case Bataru changes up the menu."
Rikuri guffawed.
"She is a genius,"
Batari agreed.
"Though I will concede that sometimes she can be a bit overwhelming."
"I've been around those sorts of people before. The kind who wake up at the crack of dawn to go exercise or do 3 hours worth of chores before anyone else even gets out of bed. Who then spend the rest of their day doing things back to back to back, only stopping to eat a light meal or take a bathroom break. Busybodies."
"That sounds like Zakiyu, all right.
Thankfully, she'll want to talk to all of you guys first,"
Ashanti said.
"She's been talking our ears off for several season cycles, so she'll be thrilled at the chance to speak with somebody new."
We rode our ants and dragons down the mountain for about 30 minutes more, until the ground beneath us leveled out into the plain. Almost instantly, we heard a loud hissing sound, and 3 giant ants with Chero women on their backs scurried over to our position. The ants bent down and unleashed gurgled growls as the rhino women held their bows at the ready, and their eyes were wide with terror as they refused to move away from Tyrion and George.
Who are these people, Queen Mother?"
one of the riders demanded.
"Lower your weapons,"
Batari motioned downward with her hands.
"They are not enemies. They are our guests."
The 3 mounted riders exchanged confused glances, but they listened to their leader.
Guests?
One of them sputtered.
"We have guests on our island?"
"We do."
Batari smiled.
"2 of them are men. And as you can see, they come with 2 dragons at their side."
The riders' mouths hung open.
"Men?"
The one in the center gulped.
"You mean like Tambori?"
"Well, he looks a bit less leathery than Tambori,"
Ashanti joked.
"Ears and nose aren't quite as big either, but yeah, just like Tambori."
"Does that mean they have..."
One of the women made a fist with her right hand and then raised her index finger up.
"Of course,"
Batari chuckled.
"That's just basic anatomy.
Can we see?"
The rhino woman at the center grinned with wonder.
I don't really do that for people I just met,"
Jonas gulped as his face turned a shade of red I'd never seen before.
"Yeah," I winked. "You usually gotta buy us dinner first, fill us with some wine, and then we see where the night takes us."
The 3 mounted riders giggled at the joke, but Batari quickly shut them down.
"Ladies,"
she snapped.
"I know this is completely new for you, but that's not an appropriate way to treat our guests. Oh, sorry, Queen Mother."
The trio all hung their heads at once and apologized.
"How'd you like it if you were just meeting somebody for the first time and the first thing out of their mouths was show us your lady parts?"
"Depends on who they were."
Ashanti snickered, which caused the hornless rhino woman to roll her eyes.
"Come on, ladies."
Batari grumbled and looked at her 2 friends.
"What have I told you about that sort of language?"
Only use it when we're sitting around the fire."
Rikuri grinned.
"After we've drank a whole bottle of palm wine?"
Batari gave an unamused look at Rikuri, but the latter was unfazed.
"Spread the word throughout the village,"
the white-haired Chero announced.
"Let everyone know these people and their dragons are visitors under my protection and are not to be harmed."
"Right away, Queen Mother."
The rhino woman in the middle bowed, and then all 3 ants turned and moved away. We watched them scuttle off into the streets of the Chero village, and then we were left with just the original 10 women we'd met at the tree.
I get the feeling this village will be easy to repopulate.
Mira snarked to me telepathically.
All you have to do is pull out your flesh spear and they'll all get weak in the knees.
As if it's not that easy with you, I teased the Dragonkin warrior.
Mira's golden eyes lit up at the thought, and a wide smile spread across her face, but she said nothing. Probably thought it was best to just leave her thoughts up to my imagination.
The stables are this way,
Batari announced.
Those of you who carry one of our visitors come with me, otherwise this journey is done. Your duties are temporarily relieved, so you may go home and rest. Thank you, Queen Mother,
several of the Rhino women said in unison. Then a handful of the Chero women split away from the group, and we all watched them scuttle down the streets of the village. After they'd gone, Batari motioned for us to follow her and then set off to the south. We walked behind her for a few minutes, down the streets made of red earth and clay, and as we moved, it almost felt like we were stuck in traffic. Batari would command her aunt to halt whenever she came to an intersection and then allow other riders to pass before moving on. Every now and then we would all have to halt in place to let pedestrians cross the road, and all along the way, the Rhino women on the sidewalks would stop and gawk at us as we passed. Some whispered to each other, while others simply dropped their jaws and stared at us in awe. It was only about 20 minutes before the large buildings began to disappear, and we were met with the sight of several smaller, single-story square buildings spread out across the grasslands. Off in the distance, I could see a crude wooden fence stretched out across the horizon, and behind the barrier was a large herd of ants. The big, reddish-brown insects mulled about the pasture. A few of them munched on the wispy grass beneath them, while others were curled up into a large pile and snoozing, and some even chased each other around as they bounced up and down like oversized puppies, and then locked their pincers in a playful display. We came up to a small single-story building on the west side of the pasture, where a single Chero woman seemed to be waiting on us. She was much shorter than the other Cheros, maybe about 5'6" in heels. The woman was built much lankier than the others, too, though she still looked like she could throw a punch if she needed to. Her hair was cut into a short brown bob with bangs, and she had all sorts of intricate golden jewelry on her neck and in her ears. On her body, she wore the same skimpy leather bikini top and thong the rest of the Chero women wore, but her gray skin was covered in red markings rather than white ones. This Rhino woman's horn was also longer than anyone but Batari's, and equally as ivory white. When she saw us approaching, the woman stood up straight, brushed off her thighs, and then did a few stretches to limber herself up. I could already tell by the energy she exuded that this was Zakiyu.
Good evening, weary travelers!
The brunette woman waved heartily. Rikuri and Ashanti rolled their eyes at each other in response.
Good evening, Zakiyu.
Batari chuckled.
How are things going in the stables today? It's been great,
Zakiyu declared.
Mirde finally laid her eggs, but the little scamp decided to spread them out herself so they'd be hard to find. So, really, I've been spending most of my day out in the fields, digging through the thick grass, trying to find little yellow circles the size of my hand.
Sounds like a great time,
Ashanti snorted.
It really was. There's nothing better than going out there in nature, feeling that warm grass on your hands as you suck in the beautiful, crisp air. I could honestly go searching for Mirak eggs every day of the week.
Yeah, I could definitely see how she might be too much for some people. But I didn't mind. Zakiyu was just a very passionate woman who wanted to share that passion with the world, and I could respect that. To me, it came across as being confident, not grating.
You obviously have forgotten what it feels like to be in the heat of battle,
Rikuri mused.
To feel the blood of your enemies spilled at your feet while you stab, slice, and cut through them as if they were made of tree bark. Oh, yeah.
Lizanne swooned.
That's this stuff.
Zakiyu glanced over at the rest of our motley crew and raised an eyebrow. Then, with her arms still crossed, the Chero woman began to silently point back and forth between each of my crew members with an intrigued expression.
And who are these people here? They already look like quite a fun bunch.
Here we go.
Ashanti giggled under her breath. I am Benjamin Whitfield, I announced as I slid off George. I also go by Draco Rex. This is my water dragon, George. I went down the line and introduced every single one of my crewmates to Zakiyu, and she returned each greeting with equal enthusiasm. When all was said and done, the woman looked over at Batari and grinned a toothy grin.
Where did you find all these people? They don't look like any Chero people to me.
They came to our island willingly.
We did. We sought your island because we wanted to hatch our wind dragon egg.
Wind dragon egg?
Zikiyu gasped, and her eyes narrowed as her head tilted to the left.
You're telling me you have a wind dragon on top of the two dragons you already have?
Five dragons.
Mira corrected.
We have three more water dragons back on our home island.
Wow!
Zikiyu gasped.
We used to have many dragons here as well, before that nasty Scudawar reared his head. We don't have a wind dragon yet,
Kandara noted as she fluttered to the ground.
We just have an egg that's ready to hatch, but it's missing the correct climate to be incubated.
Then you need to get it to the Great Hilly Plains. That's where all the wind dragons used to nest. I'd be willing to take you there right now if you just give me a second to grab a Mirak. That won't be necessary, Zikiyu.
Batari cut in.
It's almost nightfall, and as you well know, to be out on the plains after dark is suicide. Especially with the Scudawar prowling around. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but we're actually here to put our Miraks out to pasture for the day.
Aww.
The peppy Cherrywoman frowned.
Oh, poor guys. Are you sure you don't want to keep him out for a little bit longer? Maybe take a stroll down Main Street, stop by Bataru's restaurant?
Maybe another time.
Batari repeated.
For now, I want to get our guests situated so they can rest. Tonight is the festival of Nargai, after all.
Zikiyu slapped her forehead playfully.
I completely forgot about the festival! And here I was, offering to take you guys out in the plains! That all can wait, because you don't get the full Chero experience until you've seen the Festival of Nargai.
What is the Festival of Nargai? Because I really think if we're going to really go out and...
Don't worry about what it is.
Ashanti interrupted.
All you need to know is it's one of the most fun and exciting festivals of the season cycle.
But we still need to incubate the egg.
It'll be all right, Ben.
Kandara reassured me with a touch on the shoulder.
We can't really incubate an egg at night, anyway. We're going to have to wait until at least the early morning before we can leave, so why not have a little bit of fun in the meantime?
I'm all about having fun. I'm not sure about you, but I think a little bit is in order after all the crazy things we've gone through to get here.
I looked over at the sun, which was now just starting to duck below the horizon. Kandara was right. We couldn't really do anything tonight, anyways. Okay, fine. I guess we'll indulge in your festival.
You say that as if you had a choice in the first place,
Ashanti teased. One by one, the Chero women slid off their mounts and gathered into a small cluster of bodies. Then Zikiyu placed her fingers into her mouth and let out a shrill whistle. Instantly, the ants all fell into line and then began to march toward the gate of the fence. Zikiyu pranced over to the gate, opened it up, and then greeted each and every one of the Miraks as they shuffled through. Once they were all inside, the brunette woman slammed the gate shut, brushed her hands together, and placed them onto her hips.
There we go.
She smiled at the job well done.
Now I just need to feed them all and we'll be good as gold.
What do those things eat exactly?
Mira questioned.
Other than grass, of course.
Out in the wild, the Miraks can live on just grasses alone.
Zikiyu explained.
But these little guys here aren't wild, they're our babies.
What she's saying is she feeds the animals their own soup.
Rikuri laughed.
She makes it from scratch every day and then drops it into pots in front of them just like we would eat.
Oh, they're part of our tribe!
The brunette Chero woman shrugged.
That means they get to eat like they're a part of the tribe, too.
You give each one their own pot? I questioned as I scanned the field. It looks like you have a lot of them.
It takes me about 2 hours to do them all, but it's worth every single second.
Damn. They weren't kidding when they said this woman was full of productive energy.
Then you'd probably best get to work,
Batari noted.
We shall see you at the festival tonight, right?
Wouldn't miss it for the world!
Zikiyu smiled. The stable keeper gave us a goodbye wave before she turned and headed toward the building behind her.
You said she's also the one who designed your village?
Zarya questioned as we watched Zikiyu walk away.
She designed it, laid it out, helped build some of it, and is the one right now who keeps things running smoothly. If there's any problem with the way our village is running, then she is the one who sorts it out.
You really weren't kidding when you said she was a busybody. Where the hell does she even find the hours in the day?
It's a mystery to all of us.
The white-haired leader laughed.
Now, everyone, you are relieved from your posts for the day. I shall take our guests back to my dwelling, but the rest of you go and enjoy your evenings. I'll see you all at the festival tonight.
Thank you, Queen Mother,
Ashanti said in a teasing voice.
Until then, Batari.
Rikuri bowed. Then the rest of the rhino women went their separate directions, and we were left alone with their leader.
Follow me.
Batari turned to the east, motioned for us to follow, and then started to walk toward her destination. We all followed in a hurry and continued on foot for another 15 minutes. My crew trailed after Batari down the eastern perimeter of the Chero village, but we never went back into the city limits. Eventually, we came to a spot on the outskirts of town where there was a small cluster of one-story clay structures. This must have been the Rhino Woman equivalent of a suburb. Batari soon led us to a dwelling out on the western edge of the property, and she finally gestured to a structure that was still one story, but much wider than the buildings around it.
"This is my home,"
the Chero leader announced.
"It might be a little bit cramped, but it should provide shelter to all of you for the night."
I certainly don't want to sound like a rude guest,"
George interjected via our dragon bond.
"But is that going to be large enough for Tyrion and I as well?"
"I was thinking the same thing,"
Tyrion added.
"I don't think there is enough room for me to even lay down in there, let alone stay there for a whole night. In fact, I don't even think it's possible for us to fit through such a tiny little door."
"Batari, are the dragons going to stay with us in here too?"
"Of course not,"
Batari laughed.
"Do you see that hill right there behind my home? If you go over just the other side, a large pavilion will act as your shelter for the night. It's not as fancy as our homes, but it'll do to keep you out of the elements."
"Let's check it out,"
Tyrion smiled at George.
"Last one there is an acorn hoarder. What did I tell you about calling me vulgar names?"
George chuckled and shook his head.
"Only do it when I really mean it,"
Tyrion snickered as he lifted up into the sky. Tyrion flew up over the hill in a flash, and George chased right behind him. Soon both of the dragons were over the side of the hill and gone from our sight.
"How's it look?" I asked them both via my dragon bond.
"It's way better than our shelter from last night. No offense."
"Why would I take offense to that? You guys were the ones who built it."
"It'll do,"
George acknowledged.
"It's not as nice as our dwelling back home, but I guess when we're out adventuring, we have to make do with what we have."
"Is it to their satisfaction?"
Batari asked with an amused expression on her face.
"What?
Huh?" I frowned at the Rhino Women's leader. "How did you know I was talking to them?"
"We were the protectors of dragons for several hundred season cycles, Draco Rex."
Batari shook her head.
"We know all about how dragon bonds work, even though we don't have them ourselves anymore."
"They like it. They're mainly just happy somebody took us in and gave us a shelter that's better than what we were in last night."
"Good to hear."
The white-haired woman chuckled.
"Now, come inside and rest yourselves. We have a long night ahead of us."
We entered Batari's dwelling, and I was instantly taken aback with just how sophisticated it was. From the outside, the building looked like nothing but an oversized hut made of clay and leaves. But once inside, those initial impressions all went out the window. The floor was covered by elaborate black rugs, woven with the same white tribal patterns on the Chero women's skin. The walls had spaces carved out to create shelves, chairs, and a bed, while there were a couple of simple pieces of wooden furniture placed at the center of the room. What stood out to me most, however, were the intricate wood-carved statues that stood in varying intervals around Batari's dwelling. There were 5 carvings in total, and each one was designed to represent a different human-animal crossbreed. I noticed one was very hawk-like, with feathers across her body and large, taloned feet. Another one of the statues was an elephant man with a robust stomach, giant ears, and 2 tusks that sprouted out from the sides of his face. The 3rd figure was a skinny woman with a comb-over mohawk hairstyle and small, prickly spines all over the back of her body. And the other 2 were both male hybrids of a human anteater and a human warthog, respectively. "What are those?" I questioned as I pointed between the 5 carvings.
"Those are our gods, Draco Rex,"
Batari explained.
"Tai, Tambori, Nungun, Melodic, and Guruwai."
"I don't see any that look like a Cheros," Jonas noted.
"That's because there is none."
Batari frowned.
"The Chero people were not made in the image of the gods or goddesses. We were made in the image of Nargai, the Lord of the Underworld."
"Holy shit. You guys were created in the image of the Underworld."
"So the story goes,"
the white-haired beauty chuckled.
"It's a form of mockery on his part. The only sentient beings on this island, the only ones who can die or be killed, were made to represent the Lord of the Underworld. And then there's the irony of the whole situation we talked about before. We technically can have children, though we don't have any men to mate with. It's almost like a cruel joke."
I opened my mouth to correct her, but then had second thoughts. It may have been still too early to bring up the whole repopulation thing, and now was definitely an inappropriate time. "It's not a cruel joke," I noted. "You just haven't been blessed with anyone yet who can provide you with children."
"We were the same way,"
Kandara spoke up.
"Before Ben came along, we had mates, but none of them were fertile.
All of our mates were slain by orcs.
Nadir added.
As were the dragonkins and the Nihalopes. And Ben saved you?
Batari asked with a quirk of her head.
He did.
Mira nodded.
My sister has now had 2 children with him, and there are 4 more new dragonkin babies thanks to him. Not to mention all the ones that are on the way.
Lazan explained as she patted her belly.
Nadir and I are both with child, and there are 2 Nihalope women back home who are just about ready to give birth. Wow.
Batari bit her lip and furrowed her brow.
Do you think you might be able to help us, too?
All the blood rushed away from my face and down to my trouser snake at the rhino woman's words. If that's what you really want. I rubbed the back of my neck. But I figured you'd want to get to know me a little better before we just... You know.
I understand.
Batari smiled.
I'll talk it over with my subjects. It would be the greatest slap in the face to Tembori if we could figure out a way to break his curse, though.
With Ben, you'll have no problem. He seems to get women pregnant just by looking at them. Jonas!
I laughed as my cheeks flared with heat. The elderly soothsayer just shrugged.
It's true.
If that is indeed true... We may want to keep you here longer than we originally thought.
Perhaps I'm just dense.
Nima raised her hand.
Why does it seem like Tembori is punishing you? He created you to protect the most sacred beasts in the land, yet he made you in the image of an evil god and forbade you from having children.
I can explain both your questions. We were created in the image of Nargah, because as much as Tembori despises Nargah, the lord of the underworld is the most ferocious being he could think of. He wanted us to be just as powerful, ruthless, and cunning as Nargah, so he made the Chero people to look like his archenemy. As for the no-men predicament, well, we all have different theories about that.
Like what?
Nima bounced on her feet like a ballerina.
Rikuri thinks Tembori actually fears his creations. She thinks he doesn't want us to repopulate because we would eventually try to overthrow him. Our shaman, on the other hand, believes we don't have men because Tembori thinks it would make us weak and distract from our original mission to defend the dragons.
Tembori sounds like a chauvinistic ass.
I don't know what that quite means, though I'm sure it's accurate.
The white-haired Chero mused.
But for now, I'll let y'all get some rest. There are a few things I must attend to, but I'll be back in a few hours.
With that, the Chero woman bade us farewell and then sauntered out of the doorway and into the evening air. Almost instantly, my crew and I tossed down our weapons and satchels, and then we laid down anywhere we could find that would be comfortable. The 2 pregnant Kunag women ended up in the actual bed, while Jonas and Mira both snagged one of the chairs carved into the wall. The rest of us ended up on the floor, which didn't end up being as uncomfortable as one would have thought. Before long, my eyes grew heavy, and I drifted off to sleep. When I woke up, it had grown dark inside of the dwelling, save for a few candles that danced up flickering wicks. I groggily rolled over, got up onto my knees, and looked around for my crewmates. About half of them were gone. Only Jonas, the Kunag women, and Anora remained inside the dwelling, and each of them were just beginning to stir as well.
Where is everybody?
Jonas grumbled as he slowly stood from his clay chair.
Oh, I feel like I've been asleep for weeks.
Oh, come on. I rubbed my eyes. The shelter really wasn't that bad, was it?
It wasn't so much the comfort of the shelter. It was more of the fact that I kept getting woken up every hour or so by the sound of some horrific beast that surely wanted to eat us.
What are you 2 talking about?
Nadir mumbled.
I got the best sleep I've gotten in weeks.
That's because you're partly nocturnal, I reminded the Kunag woman. You were mostly sleeping during the day when the sun was out and all the creepy creatures weren't.
I second that,
Anora added.
I slept about as good as a seashell in a tsunami. Lots of tossing and turning and terror.
Do you hear that?
Jonas's head jerked to the right as he listened for whatever he was hearing. We all went silent and tried to figure out what the soothsayer was talking about. The sound started off small, like the smooth, rhythmic beating of a heart in the distance, and then slowly began to swell into a low, repeating drone. Drums. It must be for that festival they were talking about earlier.
I'd bet that's where everybody else is,
Anora added.
Then that's where we should be,
Lazan proclaimed, as she hopped out of her bed.
It's not a real celebration till the Kunag get there, anyway.
Once we were all up from our prone positions, we wandered out into the darkness outside. A few hundred feet away, out in the middle of the plains between the village and the suburb we were currently in, was a roaring fire that stretched up at least 3 stories high. Tyrion floated just above the flames, and I got the sneaking suspicion he was the party responsible for its size. People were gathered in a circle all around the giant bonfire, most of which were dancing to the upbeat rhythm of the music playing in the background. A few people sat on giant logs that had been placed around the flickering flames, and even more Chera women were pounding on drums as they rocked back and forth on the balls of their feet. The beat was fast-paced and chaotic, and it reminded me a lot of listening to the sound of rain as it pitter-pattered against the house during a thunderstorm. I wasn't ashamed to admit that as I got closer to the fire, I let the beat take over my body, and I continued to walk in time with the beat, which seemed to draw the curiosity of Jonas.
What are you doing, Draco Rex? Is this some sort of hypnotic spell they've cast over you?
What? No, it's called dancing, Jonas. The dragon can have all sorts of songs they perform and dance to.
Right.
The elderly soothsayer trailed off.
Those dances are all purely ceremonial. This is something else.
Quit being an old fuddy-duddy. I waved my hand dismissively. Anora will get in on this, right? The yellow-scaled dragonkin healer's eyes went wide as she shook her head repeatedly. Okay, so Anora wasn't a dancer.
Look who's already getting into the festivities!
Mira whistled when she saw me. The fire flickered off Mira's golden scales to create a beautiful disco ball effect in the surrounding area, and her eyes were equally as radiant. She was sitting on a log next to the 2 dragonkin twins and Zakiyu, and all 4 of them had a clay cup in their hands. Nima and Kandara were among the crowd of dancers, and both of them moved their beautiful figures to the beat of the drums alongside the sexy rhino women.
Funny, I noted as I approached the people on the log.
I would have figured a festival dedicated to the Lord of the Underworld would be a bit more macabre.
I don't know what that means,
Zakiyu admitted.
But I'm gonna assume it means not happy.
Close enough. It means dark or dreary or dealing with somber subjects.
Why would it be dark?
The brunette Chero asked.
Nargai is the only deity that looks like us. Even if he's evil, we have him to thank for our very existence.
I couldn't argue with that. So I began to survey the area and nearly doubled over with laughter at what I saw. George was over on the other side of the fire, and he grooved to the music by tapping his front feet in time with the drum beats. The blue water dragon had the expression of a dog who just got told he was going to the park as he swung his head back and forth in time and let his tongue hang out of his maw.
Go, George!
I whistled across the flames.
This is not even all of my moves, dear one. I have to stay somewhat attentive, considering I'm the one who must put out the fire if it gets too out of control.
Just keep at it, George. I chuckled before I turned back to Zakiyu. Was that your idea, to make George our personal fire department?
Oh, no.
The Chera woman shook her head.
We already have people here who are responsible for putting out the fires.
You do? Like, there are Chera women whose main job is to go around putting out fires.
There are?
Zakiyu nodded with a confused expression.
I also have Chera women dedicated to be healers and Cheros who are supposed to keep the peace in the village. To make things more organized, I even put all people with similar responsibilities into the same building. It was all part of my grand design.
Holy shit. The Chero village was a fully functioning metropolis, complete with a fire department, a police department, and a hospital. You really are a genius when it comes to this stuff, I blurted out without thinking. Zakiyu's face turned red, and she looked down and covered her mouth as she let out a giggle.
I wouldn't go that far.
You really are. I've been to a lot of different islands in my time as Draco Rex, and none of them have been anywhere close to what you've got going on here.
You're too kind, Draco Rex.
Zakiyu's dark eyes lit up as a smile spread across her face. I'm not the only one who thinks it, you know. Batari was the one who first told me how awesome you were.
Stop! You're gonna make me turn redder than a chap cab's cheeks.
Draco Rex!
I heard an unfamiliar voice announce.
There you are, Draco Rex!
I glanced to my right and saw a Chera woman approaching with the gait of a cheetah.
Though I could see the skimpy leather clothes underneath, this rhino woman had a zebra-striped apron tied around her front, and her large breasts bounced with gusto as she rushed toward me with a clay bottle in her hand and a look of pure joy on her face. The rhino woman's hay-blonde hair was pulled up into a high ponytail, whose base was wrapped up in some sort of white leather, and the markings on her gray skin appeared to be mostly short, vertical waves. That's me? I confirmed as she shuffled toward me. Do I know you?
You don't.
The woman smiled.
But you definitely should. I'm the one who's going to be keeping that gut of yours full of sustenance.
Ah, I should have guessed from the apron and the bottle in her hands that this woman was the tribe's head chef.
Oh, is that the new herbal wine you've been concocting, Baratu?
Zakiyu asked.
The others were saying it was real good. Don't be pulling my horn now.
Baratu snorted.
Rikuri and Ashanti both told me it tasted like Mirak piss.
Oh, don't let those two get you down,
the brunette woman mused.
Rikuri and Ashanti wouldn't know good wine if Tembori himself came down and poured it down their throats. Here.
The aproned woman shoved a clay cup into my hands and then proceeded to give one to the rest of my friends.
Try some of this. It's a new recipe I've been cooking up using a secret mixture of herbs and the fermented juice of gamtru berries.
Gamtru berries? Aren't those toxic?
The rind is toxic,
Baratu corrected.
The juice is perfectly safe. Don't worry, I tried it out myself, and I'm still standing here in one piece.
Zakiyu raised her eyebrows and bit her lip as she watched the chef pour the raspberry red liquid into her cup. Then she slowly raised it to her mouth, wrapped her plump pink lips around the edge, and tilted it back slowly. Zakiyu took a few gulps of the wine before she lowered her glass and wiped away the residue from her mouth, and then she grinned from ear to ear.
My goodness, Baratu!
She cooed.
That good?
The chef smiled back.
Yes, I'd like some too,
Honora requested. Baratu went around and filled up each of our cups with the savory red juice, to the point where the little clay vessels practically overflowed with crimson goodness.
To the Chiraro people and their hospitality?
Honora grinned as she raised her glass up into the air.
To the Chiraro people!
We all repeated in unison. We all clinked our glasses together, pulled them back, and then took a deep gulp. The wine slid down my throat smoothly as my mouth was filled with the flavors of the sweet berry it was made from. There was a bit of tang to the drink, but the perfect mixture of spicy and succulent herbs counteracted the bitterness to create a sensation like no other. Even though the wine wasn't hot, it warmed my insides all the way down to my toes. Whoa! I gulped as I savored the deliciousness of the wine in my mouth. This is some of the best stuff I've ever tasted, and I've had Don Perignon before.
I don't know what that is, but I'll take the compliment,
Baratu said with a bow.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to go rub this in Ashanti and Rikuri's faces.
With that, the chef sauntered away as the rest of us finished our delicious wine.
They're always so hard on her,
Zakiyu frowned.
All the poor girl wants to do is experiment with her craft.
Maybe they're both just picky eaters,
Jonas suggested.
My children were terrible about eating their wild boar when they were little.
That's for sure,
the brunette Chero nodded.
If it were up to those two, we would be eating wild prancers every single night, seasoned with nothing but salt and pepper.
As the night went on, I swore I watched the moon in the sky grow brighter. It was a full moon, and its light shone down onto the plains with a soft glow that made the whole landscape look like it was dancing. After a few more dances were performed, Batari walked out around the fire so everybody could see her. The white-haired leader raised her hands to silence the crowd, and we all watched with bated breath to see what would happen next.
Tonight, we celebrate the vile, wicked Nargai,
Batari announced.
He may have been an evil, spiteful mud wallower, but we still cherish him as the original Chero. And now... now comes the part you've been waiting for all night, my fellow Cheros. Zamwe's gonna lead us in the cutting of the ties.
The rest of the Chero women let out a resounding round of applause at their leader's words, though none of my friends had any clue what she was saying. Still, we watched as another rhino woman stood from a log and slowly wandered out next to Batari. Though this woman appeared just as youthful as the rest of the Chero people, she moved as if she were a tortoise.
Her knee-length chocolate-brown hair swayed slowly as she meandered into sight, and she used her long wooden staff to support herself as she walked. I could barely see the gray of this woman's skin, since her body was completely covered from head to toe in white markings. But she finally came to a stop, turned around, and raised her staff up into the air.
My friends!
Her voice was deep and booming.
Tonight I shall lead you in the cutting of ties. For even though we are created in the likeness of Nargai, we wish to be nothing like him. He was the most ruthless, heartless deity of them all, and the Chero people are the polar opposites. We are kind, noble warriors who lay our lives down on the line each and every day so we can bring peace and protection to ourselves and the dragons that have been entrusted to us. Ladies, please raise your weapons.
All of the Chero women around us lifted up their spear swords and their arrows and placed them against the outer edge of their horns. We all then watched in awe as the rhino woman dragged the sharp edges of their weapons against their ivory and peeled a layer away like they were peeling an orange. Some of them only took off a layer the thickness of a kiwi skin, while others carved out chunks the equivalent of a piece of Laffy Taffy. At the same time, they all chanted in unison in their native tongue and approached the fire slowly. Finally, once they were close enough to the flames, they each bowed their heads, mumbled something unintelligible under their breath, and then tossed the shards of their horns into the fire. The Chero women stood there in silence as they watched the literal pieces of themselves burn away, and then they slowly backed away from the flickering flames.
For our guests, please allow me to explain the significance of this ceremony,
the long-haired woman, Zamwe, announced.
We shave off a piece of ourselves every season cycle, and burn it in the fire to symbolize how we have severed our ties with Nargai. Though we celebrate him as the deity responsible for our likeness, we wish to be nothing like him. So, we sacrifice a bit of ourselves to Tambori to let him know we still trust him over the Lord of the Underworld, no matter how similar we may appear.
Wow. And here I thought our ceremonies were complex.
The more sins we have committed, the more horn we slice off. Because the more we sin, the closer we are to becoming like Nargai himself.
So, wait, I said, as I pointed over to Rikuri. Does that mean she cut off her whole horn at one point?
Not all at once,
Rikuri retorted.
It was a process that took several dozen season cycles.
But you did cut it all off as part of the ceremony?
Mira asked.
What can I say?
The dark-haired rhino warrior shrugged.
I'm a pretty bad girl most of the time. It's a good thing we don't have this ceremony back home. I think my whole body would have to be sacrificed eventually.
Me too,
Luzon added.
Actually, I think all of us Kunag would have to pay a fairly hefty price for penance. Now that we have given our offerings to Tambori,
Zamwe interjected,
we may continue on with the festivities. Ladies?
The mystic Chero pointed over to the drumline, who instantly began again in a rhythmic chorus. Then we all drank, danced, and celebrated for hours and hours more, until it felt like my feet were about to fall off from all the movement we'd been doing.
This is great!
Nima cackled as we danced opposite each other.
See? It was a good idea to take this little break. We needed to unwind after everything we've been through.
Yeah, I'll admit I was wrong. This is totally worth it. My words caught inside my throat when I saw a pair of reflective eyes appear in the grass behind Nima, and I instantly stopped dancing and drew my sword, which caused everyone around me to let out a gasp of surprise and stop what they were doing.
What's the matter, Ben?
Guys, there's something in the grass. I just saw its eyes reflecting the fire. Batari's face fell, and she held up her hand to command the drums to stop. Sure enough, the second there was silence, we all heard the sound of something sneaking around in the rustling grass.
Spotted hounds,
Batari whispered.
Spotted hounds have entered the village.
Oh, Tambori's tusks,
Rikuri growled, as she pulled her sword spear out of its sheath and flipped it around.
All of our Miraks are locked up inside the stable. We have to get to them right away,
Zakiyu declared.
They'll be sitting ducks if we let the spotted hounds get to them first.
We'll also be sitting ducks if we can't get to our mounts.
Batari hissed.
We're good at hand-to-hand combat, but not against something like that. We need to...
Before she could finish her sentence, a four-legged beast leapt out of the grass and let out a primal snarl. In the firelight, I could see its figure was about the size of an elk, with a hunched back and matted gray fur all over its body. The creature was covered with dark spots, and its muzzle was shaped like that of a dog, with one distinct difference. The thing had no lips. Instead, you could see the dirty pink gums and razor-sharp teeth of the creature, as it opened its mouth wide and prepared to tear Batari limb from limb. Luckily, George had other plans. The water dragon blasted the monster with a spray of salty ocean water and sent it into the ground before us with a painful yelp. Before it could reorient itself, I sprang onto its back, flipped my sea-glass sword around, and stabbed it into the side of the monster's neck. It whimpered as it writhed in pain, and dark, warm blood oozed out from its fresh wound. Then, after a few spasms, its yellow eyes went cold and rolled back into its head. "What the fuck is this thing?" I panted, as I pulled my sword out from the monster's neck.
"One of our island's most deadly predators,"
Ashanti said in an ominous tone.
"And I think we're currently surrounded by 'em."